Hello, 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 mamas, and welcome to another episode of Angel Mom's Hopes of Heaven, a part of Alana's Song. I am Angela Presley, your host, and today I am so happy to have the guest today. Her name is Kelly Bloss, and she's here with Joco Angels, her organization. She's here to just talk to us, to help us heal, to give us some nuggets to make it through our day, maybe a minute that we need to just take a breath and gather ourselves and get back on track. So I would like to introduce Kelly. Kelly, Kelly, welcome to the podcast. We are so excited to have you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Angela. And thank you for doing this. I think it's a wonderful way to communicate with other moms and families. It's a very unique place to be.
Yes, yes, yes. This is a podcast that's been in me for a while. And I just said, you know what? I'm going to do it. And I'm so happy that I went through and I got it going. So I like to start each podcast with, we're all moms here, so we want to know about your babies. We want to know about your sons. So if you could start with that and just tell us whatever you would like us to know.
Sure. So I came from a broken home. I was emancipated by the time I was 15. And in my heart, all I ever wanted to be was a mom. You know, I wanted to get it right. I wanted to do things differently than my family did. And so it was just all I ever wanted was to be a mother. And when I was 19 years old, I got pregnant for the first time. And I was pregnant with my son, David. And he was born right as I turned 20. In 1998, and he was the most precious baby. He was so good. Yeah. We, you know, he was one of those kids that was just always happy. He was one of those babies that didn't cry too much or give a lot. You know, he was such a good baby. And by the time he was like 5 or 6 months old, I knew I wanted to add to our family. Uh-huh. I knew I wanted to have siblings. And I thought, well, this is pretty easy.
Yeah.
He's such a good baby. We could totally keep doing this. And so we had our second son, Adam, within, I guess. So David was born in 1998 and Adam was born in 1999. So they were about 18 months apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I had Adam, I learned that not all babies are the same. And he was a little bit more of a challenge. And so, you know, at that point I said, you know, two is pretty good. Maybe we'll just kind of stop there. Uh-huh. And God had other plans. So we had scheduled all the procedures needed to happen in order for us to just stop at two. But in the midst of that, I became pregnant again. And 14 months after Adam, I had my third son, John. And that his was a very difficult pregnancy. We were in the midst of moving to Okinawa, Japan. I had some issues with the pregnancy as far as my placenta and stuff. And so the doctors had basically told me that I would not be able to carry John full term.
Mm.
And, you know, because my husband at the time was in the Marine Corps and on leave or on deployment quite a bit, and I had two babies at home, they could not put me on bed rest. So they just said, you know, we're just going to let this play its course. And but one day I was at church and I was praying, and I was actually taking communion, and the priest came along and he put a blessing on me and he said, that baby's going to be something. And it just gave me strength and hope and courage in that moment that he was going, that I wasn't going to lose him.
Yes.
And I didn't. And so John was born in Okinawa, Japan in 2000. And so I was a mom of three little rambunctious boys, all very, very different, in Okinawa, Japan. And so that's kind of the beginning of our story.
Yeah. Hands full with three boys. And I can, while you're describing, all I see is, like you said, rambunctious,
Yeah.
just jumping around and just fighting and, wrestling. Boys will be boys. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was so blessed at that time. My husband, like I said, was in the Marine Corps and we lived in another country. So I was able to stay home with my boys for the first 7 years. And so our days were just full of out in the park and at the ocean and teaching them
Yeah.
how to swim. And so we had a very full life together in those first 7 years.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, I know you said that before the boys that you had kind of like a rough life, yeah, just growing up. Did your relationship ever mend, like with your parents, and were you able to involve them and into the boys' lives? How did that come about as far as that healing process?
So that's kind of been a lifelong journey. My own story, my dad died when I was 6 years old in a car accident. And my mom was a nurse, and I had a brother, an older brother, and a younger sister, and she really struggled with my dad's death, and chose, in order to, in, instead of really grieving and going through that process, to involve other men in our lives, and those choices were typically not great. The first stepfather that I had was ended up being an addict, and so that you can imagine the turmoil of the
Yes.
back and forth with him. And then the man that she chose as our second stepdad was very abusive, not only to her but to us, physically, sexually. It was a very, very bad situation. So we were separated from my mom when I was 12 years old, and placed with my grandparents. And at that point, the relationship with me and my mom was completely severed. There was just no, I did not want anything to do with her. As I got older and after I was emancipated, and that was due to my own choices of not being able to settle, and not being able to accept where I was with my grandparents. I looking back, I made a lot of my own choices as a teenager that caused turmoil.
Yes.
I tried many times over the years, both me and my mom, to resolve our relationship. My stepdad ended up passing away when I was 19, right before David was born. And but there wasn't any real forgiveness at that point on my part for
Right.
my mom and things that she had done. And the more I grew as a parent, the less I could understand the choices that she made. And I will say that my faith at that time, was very, very shaky.
Yes.
When I was 19 years old, right before I had David, I was addicted to methamphetamines. And, I stopped using when I became pregnant with him. But after I had him, I wanted to lose weight and I got back on it. And there was a point in time after he was born that my husband at the time said, "I can't do this. I'm not going to put my son through this, and we're leaving you." And in that very moment, I cried out to a God I didn't know
Yes.
and wasn't sure if he existed, and said, "God, just give me one more chance." And I felt arms come around me in that moment. And my husband looked at me and he said, "I want whatever you have." And instead of leaving me, he took me home and put my son in my arms. And from that moment on, I never touched another drug.
Wow.
Not to say that things weren't perfect, but I started to understand God, and and I believe at that moment, that's when my salvation was secure, and so the very next day, I contacted the church that we were going to, the priest's wife. It was an Episcopal church, so they do priests. And she led me through the prayer of salvation on my knees with David in my arms. And so that was the beginning of my faith journey, and also the beginning of me trying to figure out this family situation.
Yeah.
And so over the years, I was back and forth with my relationship with my mom. We all, my brother, my sister, my mom, and I live very far away. We always have. Like I said, at one point we lived in Japan. and so our proximity affected our ability to have relationship. But I've always been the one to reach out and try to connect the family, whether that was through text or email or calls. Today, I'm very, very grateful and proud to say that I have a wonderful relationship with my mom. We talk almost every day.
Wow.
She'll be here in a couple of weeks for my son's wedding. And God has restored that completely. And I'm able to see her with such compassion, see, you know, the growth that she's been through in the past 20 years and what she's done as far as raising grandchildren. It's just, it's amazing what God can show you when you truly do turn your life over and surrender to him. And that took me 40 years.
Just beautiful, beautiful. Just thinking about your mom losing your dad. Unless you go through it, people don't get, they don't understand how crippling losing someone can be. So for her to lose your dad, you know, our mind is, okay, I got to get up, I got to get going, I got to provide for the kids all by myself now, you know, instead of just, you know, learning how to grieve or, you know, going to see someone about grieving, whatever the case may be, to get on the right path, if there is a right path to grieving, you know, rewinding and looking back at where the grief started in the family. It's, you know, it could really do damage, and you're wondering what's going on? Why can't I get it right? Why am I on the wrong track? Or, you know, and it just all rewinds back to the loss.
That's right.
Yeah. The loss. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And I've had an opportunity over the past, you know, years thinking about my mom and our relationship, to really go back to that moment and what that must have been like for her to have three little kids. I mean, she was very young. My dad was 29 when he passed away. And and it's just heartbreaking to see what she, you know, he had passed away tragically in a car accident. There was a dump truck involved. So you're talking about years of court and with businesses. And so, yeah, the whole opportunity to grieve was not there for her, and there was just, you know, and so that was part of what healed our relationship, was really a compassion and understanding.
And it takes a while for you to grow and to kind of put yourself in her seat. I'm a young mom with three boys. If I lost my husband, you know,
right.
Wow, God, he just knows how to work it. He just does. So go ahead and tell us about the boys, about, you know, when they were older and how was that?
So like I said, when I accepted Christ, I stopped using drugs. But I also, over the years, struggled with alcohol. And so that's something I just want to put in there as a thread. And once we were in Okinawa, Japan for about 3 years, my husband, the boy's father, decided that he wanted a divorce. Mm-hmm. And we ended up moving to Georgia, me and the three boys. And so at that point, I was a single mom. I think David was in first grade at the time. Mm-hmm. And so the kids were very young. and after about 5 years, I had a daughter with another. He really was always just a friend.
Yeah.
You know, it was never really anything. I was a single mom with now four kids, three boys and a girl. excuse me. And I struggled with alcohol going throughout their childhood. It didn't stop me. I was one of those people that was a functioning alcoholic, so it never stopped me from working, from putting the kids in different activities. They played sports from the time that they were little, but it definitely affected how they viewed home life and how they viewed church, really, and Christianity and Christ, because, you know, we went to church every Sunday. They were involved in every youth activity that would ever be there. But when mom was home behind closed doors, you know, when we finally got a chance to settle for the evening, I was drinking, you know, and that, and when you drink like that and you have so much trauma and so much going on, it causes you to engage in drama. And so I was constantly in drama with my family, with my ex-husband, the boy's father, and it's so much bigger when alcohol is involved than it needs to be. And so that's something that they experienced growing up. And I started to see, especially with David, when he was a teenager, some of the effects of that and the choices that he made. He became, he was always so funny. He was always happy. He was one of those kids that just was the clown. He was a bigger kid, so he struggled with his weight. None of the other kids did, but he did, and that affected him. I was also that person growing up, so I totally could relate to him. My heart broke for him, but I saw that he used that in a way, like as a funny. You know what I mean? He would use it as a joke.
Yes.
In front of himself. But he was struggling with mental health. And so we did the back and forth thing, live with your dad, live with your mom, try different schools. He just, making decisions was never, is one of those things where he would do something and never think of the consequence.
Yeah.
And, you know, we knew that at a young age that he was diagnosed with ADHD. Mm-hmm. At one point in his life, if I put him on medication, and him and his dad and I went back and forth. So if he was with his dad, he wasn't on it. If he was with me, he was. And that's not healthy and or good for a child or for the brain. So he just struggled with that. And when he was 14, I think it was the first time, he tried to take pills, and it was something like Tylenol or something like that, to as an attempt to end his life. And he was also getting in trouble with legal. So we had intensive home therapists coming in. But just at that point, I was still drinking. And so I think that looking back, I still wasn't making the very best decisions for David. And I'm not trying to take all the responsibility on myself, but I am saying that, you know, I know that that played a part in some of the decisions I made and how I raised him. And ultimately, when he was 17 years old, I think he was living with his dad, and he got involved with a group of kids that were going around in Jacksonville and stealing from cars. And so they were breaking in, they were stealing whatever they could from the cars. And when they were caught, David being David, he sat down in that room with that detective and told him every single car they had ever broken into, and, you know, times, locations, dates. And so he ended up being charged with multiple felonies. And the detective called me. It was on my birthday, I remember. And he said, you know, your son is being super honest, and it's probably going to be to his detriment. And, you know, you just really need to encourage him because he's very depressed at this point. And so at that time, visiting in jail was by video. Like, so he was 2 hours away from where I lived. If I would drive down there, I'd be on video for 15 minutes. So what I did instead was I made sure he had money on his account so that he could call me every day. Yes. While he was in jail, he called me every single day. He asked for a Bible. He asked for faith-based books. And our relationship actually grew. He wrote a lot of letters. I knew he was safe. I knew where he was. And after about a year, and remember, he's 17 years old at the time. He's young. After about a year, they finally let him out on pre-trial release. And they sent him to live with his dad, which I tried not to have that happen, but he did. And then he ended up within like a couple of weeks, not with his dad, living on the streets kind of thing. And then he went back to court, and they were going, I think they were going, as far as I know, the day he went back to court, I think he heard from his attorney that he was probably going to pull some time. And he called me from the courthouse and said, "Mom, I have to come back to court tomorrow. I'm just going to stay here tonight at dad's. And everything's fine." And he was laughing. He was driving a car that was like a convertible. And we had this, conversation. I was telling him, "David, be safe, be careful." He's, "Oh, I left my hat at the courthouse. I'm going to turn around." Just laughing. "I love you, Mom. I'll talk to you later." And 3 o'clock in the morning, I received a phone call that he had taken all of his dad's oxycodone and had passed away. And it was one of those moments. I'm sure other moms listening know that phone call where it's just your whole world falls apart. And it did for me at that moment. And there was, that feeling of helplessness, and there's nothing that you can do to change this moment. And for me, that put me in a 6 month spiral of just trying. I mean, I would wake up in the morning and drink. It was so bad. And at that point, I weighed about 400 pounds. I was miserable. Prior to his death, I was going through a program to do bariatric surgery. I called my doctor and I said, "I don't want to do it. I can't do it. I don't want to do anything. I'm going through this." And she was so compassionate and kind. And she said, "Just stay in the program." And she said, "I know what you're going through. Just stay in the program." And so I was like, "Okay, whatever. I know I'm not going to pass this psychological exam. I'm basically crazy right now. I cannot do any of this." And I continued to drink. But one night, laying in my recliner, I laid there and I was talking to God, drunk, and I said, "God, I don't want to drink anymore. I don't want to do this." So it's about 6 months after David had passed. And I said, "If I know I can't quit, but I know you could take it. You did this for me with drugs." And I said, "If you can't, if you won't take it, just kill me. Just take me, because I can't live like this anymore." And a few days later, I got the call that I was approved for that surgery. And the key to that was that I had to go on a 5 week clear liquid, no food, no nothing diet. And I saw that in that moment as an answered prayer, like God saying, "Here's your chance." He said, I can't lay it down for you, but if this is what you want." And somehow my husband went on the 5 week clear liquid diet with me, and we did it together. And by the time I was done and had my surgery and had an opportunity to drink again, I was by myself in a business conference, said, "Man, I could go get a glass of wine and nobody would even know." And God spoke to my heart and said, "I would know."
I would know.
And I called my husband. I said, "Oh my gosh, I'm free. I'm free. I'm never going to drink again. And I know that." And so that's been almost 6 years. And God is just, that moment in time began the healing of my grief journey. I started to process losing David in a real way because I hadn't before that. I started to rebuild my relationship with my children and be the mom that they needed. And I felt like at times, especially with John and Adam, like there were so many times where I apologized to them and said, "I wish I could have been this person for you," because they were older teens at that time. David, John was 16, Adam was 17. And there was a Thanksgiving a couple of years after David died, where we were sitting around the table, and my son said, "Let's say what we're thankful for." And he said, "I'm thankful that I don't remember you any other way, Mom." He's like, "You changed so much." And it was just that moment where in the Bible it says that I will restore to you the years the locust had eaten. God did that for me. He restored not only my health and my sanity and my relationships, but he gave me back, like where the kids would only remember all of the good things of their childhood. And my daughter doesn't even think about, mom ever drinking. She doesn't even know. Like, it's amazing. And so that it's crazy for a parent to say, that something good can come out of a death of a child.
Mm.
But I know that God chose that moment, and God chose David to heal our family. And the only way he could do that was to bring him home. And so it's just been, so looking at that in that light has been so helpful for me over the years, and being able to process grief and understand the word of God, and see that, you know, God's word is so true. We want to suffer in grief. We, as parents, as family members, we want to feel this deep pain. And I went through that, and I know, you know, how important it is. And it's not, there's no wrong way or right way to grieve, but God's word says something different, you know, about how we as faithful people and people that follow him are to grieve, and how we should see grief, and knowing that we're going to see this person again, that he has provided for us, and that, you know, we don't grieve as the world grieves, and we can laugh when someone dies and cry when they're born. And so I've really dug deep into grief since losing David.
Yeah. Wow. That's powerful. That is powerful. Can you, as you look back, you know, healing and going through the grief, can you confirm that the alcohol addiction went all the way back to, of course, the childhood, but the grief of dad, and just not, you know, knowing which way to go and what to do, and watching your mom, and just the threat of your husband leaving, and you know that I'm going to church through the day, but at night, behind closed doors, this is what I'm doing. The hold that it had on you. It's people, we grab for things.
Yes.
In this grief journey, just, you know, to help us through. So we understand, but your kids don't. They just see, well, mom's back in the room, she's laying down, she's drinking, you know, or, you know, she's kind of closed off from us. That that hold that was on you, do you think that David kind of used that same, well, if it worked for mom to, like, you know, get us through going to school each day, you know, I don't know about your ex-husband. I don't know if he had any struggles, but just that link of watching you go through it, that David felt like, I need to hold on to something also.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, had David had an opportunity to get into a stable life, or somewhere where he had some kind of financial ability, which he just never did. He was always back and forth and on the streets. He probably would have become an addict or an alcoholic, and chosen to self-medicate, because that's what I was doing. I was self-medicating. And really, for me, it started at a different kind of grief. It was the grief of the loss of my marriage, which happened well before my husband ever left in Okinawa. And so that really kicked off, and the sexual abuse.
Yeah.
Just, all, you know, how I viewed myself and how I felt when I was drinking.
Yeah.
Is what, you know, I felt more confident. I felt more able to do certain things, and more willing to do certain things when I was be drinking. And I never forgot that feeling that alcohol gave me. And so that's what I was searching for all those years, was that feeling of I'm okay, when really I was never okay. You know, there was things that I needed to process and deal with and grow up and not be a victim, that I didn't want to, you know, that I was scared of. And so I spent a long time You know, like I said, I was 40 years old when the light finally came on and God took this from me. But I've spent a long time exacerbating the victimhood of my childhood, my past, and what I had been through, and not seeing anything else and not seeing anyone else, you know. So yeah, I think for sure. And you know, my ex-husband struggles with addiction. He was addicted to pills after getting out of the Marine Corps. And so the boys, they were either at home with mom functioning but drinking, or with dad at his house, where he was, you know, he hadn't worked after he got out of the Marines all his life, because he was addicted to pills and alcohol. So these were the two households that they were bouncing from.
A sense of stability, but not a healthy,
Right.
environment.
Confusing and chaotic.
Yes, definitely. How, your ex-husband, with David, knowing that he found, pills in his home. How did that affect him? Did that, help him straighten up, or do you?
That relationship, unfortunately, has been strained for many, many years. And so I don't want to say too much about
Yeah,
that,
that's
other
fine.
than, yeah, other than to say that, you know, it was devastating,
Yeah.
you know. And it was devastating for the relationship with him and our other children,
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
very unfortunate.
I get it. I do get it. I get that. I do. Sibling, my Alana has a brother and a sister. And it is a family grief. It is just devastating for not just moms. It's a whole sibling grief going on. Your children, how, they were, David was the youngest. So I'm quite,
Oldest, he's the
I'm
oldest.
sorry, he was the oldest. So I'm quite sure they had a look up to him, or a, my big brother type deal. How did you help them along the way of just kind of, we're all just kind of finding our way.
Right. So each, you know, as I said in the beginning, each one of my children are very, very different, and they all processed it differently. Because of David's back and forth and the choices that he had made, the relationship as teenagers that the boys had was not great. And so when he died, that was very, very difficult for his brothers. You know, my middle son, Adam, he was one that just wanted to process it. So he would call in the middle of the night and be very upset and want to talk about it. And we went through different counselors, and you know, over time he began to process his grief. He also was one that has a very strong faith and still does to this day. And so he was able to lean on Christ during that time, even when I couldn't, even when I was still in my mess that first 6 months. You know, but after I quit drinking and I started processing, he was able to process a little bit more with me. And so he handled it well. Isabel, my youngest daughter, she did have a close relationship with David, and they were just buddy buddy kind of thing. So whenever he was around, she was happy to see him, and they would joke around and laugh. And she also is just a very strong individual. And so she had her moments. But she was one that really, at that point in her life, she going into middle school, didn't really want to talk too much about it. And so me being very public with JoCo Angels and with our life as it was, it took her a longer time to want to really talk about it. But as when she got into her last year of middle school, she started volunteering with JoCo Angels, and she would speak to her to students at our school about
Yeah.
drugs and death and suicide and mental health. and so she's become more of a vocal advocate
Yeah.
for
Yeah.
that. John, my youngest son, immediately after David died, and really probably before, he was already dabbling in drugs. And losing David and going through that kind of a loss really just began a long spiral when it came to drugs, and to the point where I wasn't really sure all the time, kind of like it was with me, how deep he was,
Yeah.
because he was able to do things. You know, he at one point joined the Navy, went through all the way through boot camp, went to A school, and then was caught with drugs and was out. His behavior in school and with the, legally, it was a problem. And so it went from smoking marijuana to pills, and in and out of our house. You know, he became involved with a young lady, and but right after David died, and both of them kind of just went on this party lifestyle, and there was nothing that I could say or do to deter it. And he really separated himself from our family. He wanted nothing to do with Joko Angels. He would tell me that I was crazy. I really didn't understand what I was doing with Joko Angels. You know, I was
Right.
invited to speak by someone in our community that said, "Hey, we want to put this forum together. It's about drugs and what the effect on our community." I'm like, "Well, yes, David died from an overdose, but he wasn't an addict. Yes, he died from oxycodone, but it was a choice. Where do I fit into this?" And I really didn't understand where I fit. But God has shown me that he had me exactly where he needed me with this organization from the very beginning, because I started learning how to interact with parents who were dealing with addicted loved ones, how to deal with people who were in addiction. And we became immersed as a family in addiction and lifestyle. And it wasn't until a few years later that we realized the extent of John's addiction and started to really deal with that. And very, very painful time for us as a family. And you know, he went back and forth for medicated assisted treatment. I don't know if you guys know what Suboxone and methadone, and he would move in with us, he would break up, he would move back in. He ended up having a daughter in 2021, beautiful little baby girl who's the light of our lives. And you know, we were just very hopeful for John that his life would change. And there was a moment in December of 2022, just this past December, where he was having a spiral. It was one of those nights where he had decided to break up with the mother of his child, and wanted to get clean, but wasn't doing it the right way. And so he went on a binge, and he was saying that he was going to kill himself and that he was very unhappy with us and very unhappy with his relationship. And I went to church that night for a recovery meeting, and I just laid him down on the altar. And I just said, "God, heal him. Do whatever you have to do. Take him as far as you need to take him, but don't take him from us." And that night, he tried to rob somebody at knife point for money. And we didn't find this out that it was that very night for a couple of weeks till it came out in the news. And I was able, and they were trying to identify this person. It was clearly my child. I knew from the minute I saw the picture who it was. He had been gone for a couple of weeks. We didn't know where he was, but I got a hold of him and I said, "It's time to turn yourself in." And he let me come and get him and turn him in. And he ended up being in jail for a couple of months. And then he went to a program called the Hope Center, which is a faith-based program. And we got to see him turn his life over to Christ. We got to see him completely sober. Just the relationships between my husband and him, myself and him, his siblings start to grow, his relationship with his daughter. It was the most beautiful gift. I can't even describe it to you. I feel like John was going to die December 30th. I feel like God knew that it was time, that his life had gotten so out of control. But God gave me a gift and allowed me to see John as he really was supposed to be. And he left the Hope Center and came and lived with us. Things were going well. He had a job. He fell in love. He was dating someone. And I don't know what happened, but he had a moment and he relapsed. And that one time killed him. And it took him on June 21st of 2023. So just a couple of months ago, 2 months tomorrow, we lost John to an overdose. And, losing David was one thing. It's completely different. When I walked into my house and found and saw that John was gone and got on my knees and stroked his beautiful face and talked to him. In that moment, this is something that as a parent of an addicted person, you imagine that you could potentially be in that moment. And I always imagined that I would be on the floor, that this would be the end of me. And I told John that. I said, John, I cannot lose you. I cannot lose another one. And I told him, I won't make it through.
Yes.
But sitting on my knees in his room, holding his hand, my husband and I just started praying out loud. I don't even remember this. But people that were in the house said, we couldn't believe that we could hear y'all praying over John and thanking God for the time that you had with him. And a peace fell over our home. And it was one of those things that I cannot even describe. It is supernatural.
Yeah.
It is something that is, and in the next days, this past couple, even today, there were times where I questioned God and be like, God, am I crazy? Am I supposed to be feeling this brokenness? But all I can think about was the 6 months, was the gift, was the time and the beauty. I believe God's word when he says that we're all appointed a time and a day. That
Wow.
we John was appointed a day, and God made it the most beautiful time that we could have had. We don't know why he had his moment of relapse, and we'll never know why. But we know that he allowed us to see him restored, and we know where John is. And that has given us so much hope in a time where we should all be shattered.
Yeah. Wow. Two sons, I have to stop right here and just give my condolences, because it's always a thought, when you lose one. I'm not gonna be able to make it if I lose another. When I lost Alana, I didn't move for months. I didn't move for months. No work, no anything. So, this kind of heartbreak and heartache, there's no way that you feel I can take round two, or there's no way I'm going to physically be able to take this. Mentally, physically, I'm done. So to sit and listen to your faith, and for you to go through the moment that we all say we cannot do again, we cannot, to listen to how you and your husband just pulled through that. Explain to us, or just kind of let us know. Of course, there is still hurt.
Oh, yes.
Of course, there's still pain. This is son two. This is your second child. But because there, I talk to moms all over the globe, and there are moms everywhere that has lost more than one. And I listen to them and I read their posts, and it's like a dreadful life for them. So what can you offer? What can you offer moms who are in your seat that have more than one child that's gone on? I can't offer anything for that.
Yeah. And this is such a sensitive question because everybody, every person is going to experience grief differently. And I never want to take away from another mom who has lost more than one child and take away her experience or make her feel like she, whatever it is that she's going through, is not right.
Yeah.
So I'll start by saying that in the beginning, and I'm a cry look, when I lost.
I do want to say, I did not know you're still very, you know, I didn't know John, it's just only been a couple of months. So I do want to extend any apologies if it's too sensitive for you right now.
No, and that's the amazing thing about this is that if I felt like it was too soon, I would have certainly told you.
Okay.
But there's a reason why God allows for opportunities to share.
Yes.
And it being this early is probably just more confirmation of his power and his grace in our life. And before I answer the question about other moms, I just want to give that caveat that whatever you're experiencing, whatever you're feeling is valid and right. And there's no right or wrong way to do it. And I'm not special in any way. And I have questioned God over and over again. Like, why do I have this peace? Why do I have this grace? But so for me, in my experience, the past year or so, even before John died, or even before we really understood the extent of how deep his addiction was, there was a moment where we started to really grow in our relationship with God and in his word. And we changed churches and started sitting under our pastor, who was able to preach the word of God to us in a way that we understood it and were able to study it in a way that we haven't before.
Yeah.
And my understanding of God and his word has grown in the past year, of his love and his grace and his mercy and what he wants for his people. And he knows that we hurt and he knows that we suffer, but he truly does want to come alongside us and lift that from us. And I just know for me, what has changed the whole experience of losing a second child is his word. And I mean, that alone is just, there's moments where I am panicked with anxiety. You know, I have not seen my granddaughter in 6 months. There's relationship, or I'm sorry, 6 weeks. There is relationships that are broken right now due to losing John. And so there's moments of deep, deep, deep pain and fear and insecurity and anxiety. And I just go straight to his word. And it immediately, if I start reading it out loud or if I start digging deeper, it just brings a peace and a calm over me. And, you know, I wish that I wish that other moms and parents would feel that same thing. And that's the only thing I can offer is Jesus and his word, and Jesus is the word. And that's all I can offer.
Love that. I love that. Of course, we have moms who are different beliefs and no belief. But just for you to say, this is what I do. Mm-hmm. Jesus is the answer for me. There may be moms out there who, because of you, is going to say, okay, let me try. Let me see. Let me try out this Jesus thing.
Put a fleece out, and did it. You know, and I always tell people, you know, just give it a shot. You know, what are you gonna lose? You
What
know.
are you gonna lose? What are you gonna lose? I love that. I
And
love
you know, for me, the past 2 months, if you need a place to start, King David was a man after God's own heart. He lost his son, and he experienced what it feels like to be a bereaved parent. And if you need a place to read in God's word about someone who hurt the way we hurt and describes it the same way that we describe it, start in Psalms and just read Psalms, because you'll see him pour out his pain and pour out his hurt. And then he comes back and he says, "But Lord, I trust you. But Lord, I praise you. I know you're with me. I want to serve you." And there's no better example of a grieving parent and what we feel than in Psalms and reading David's words.
Wonderful place to start. Wonderful place to start. And I'll piggyback that because I always remind myself the father had to give his son. The father had to give his son. So if anyone understands where I am, the father himself lost his son just for a brief, but he knew what it was like to
To
lose.
have your heart torn out.
Wonderful, wonderful. Kelly, I got a couple of more questions and then we're gonna wrap up here. Can you tell moms about Joco? Can you let us get on the organization and let us know what that's all about?
Yes, we are a group of family members. Many of us have lost children to overdose or addiction or addiction overdose related deaths. And we have come together to support our community, really Johnston County. So we're JOCO Johnston County. We work in other counties. We try to spread the wealth as much as we can as far as, you know, resources and knowledge. But you know, there's several key things that we do, and one of those is we have a support group called Parents of Addicted Loved Ones. That is a nationwide group, and they PAL provides all of the training, and so we have a couple of facilitators in JOCO Angels that provide that weekly support group to parents who are dealing with addicted loved ones, and so you can go on PALgroup.org to find out more information if there's a Parents of Addicted Loved Ones group in your area. We also provide one-on-one grief support. So if a family is suffering a loss, one of us will go out and sit with them and talk to them if they would like us to, and just be there to walk beside a person in that loss. And so the day that I lost John, my whole group, everybody that we knew, was like in my house, just caring for me, bringing crazy stuff like toilet paper and paper plates and food and things like that, and just making sure that I didn't need for anything, and that I had other moms who had experienced loss sitting beside me and talking to me, and other family members. So that's one of the things we do. We also do one-on-one counseling for people who are struggling with addiction, and send them to, we provide scholarships for them to go to. And so we work with different agencies throughout North Carolina to get people the treatment that they need, and hopefully that we don't lose any more. Really, we're focused mainly, and I know that you have with your podcast, it's not all addiction related, like any parent who has lost. We're very focused on the opioid crisis and what's happening with fentanyl, and how many children that we're losing to that. So that's the area of focus that we work in, is just opioids and any kind of addiction, just trying to support and help them through.
Wow, what a wonderful organization. Because you have families and addicts out there that really don't know where to turn in the middle of this chaos that's going on. So, and it's just easy to remember the PAL. It's, you know, yeah. So just That's so wonderful what you guys are doing, because it's definitely something that's, I lost Alana through guns, through guns. So the drug thing is, it's pretty much
a piece of it.
Yeah, definitely. It's rampant, just like the guns. So it's a wonderful thing that you guys are doing. Wonderful thing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Can you give, is there like a specific website, or is there, can you give the name of, is there a Facebook group that moms can jump on and see really fast, or?
Absolutely. So we have both a Facebook, Instagram, and a website. So our website is www.jocoangels.com. Our Facebook is Joco Angels Overdose Awareness and Support, because Facebook doesn't let us put opioid.
Yeah.
Our Instagram is Joco Angels 2. I can be reached at jocoangels@gmail.com. Happy to speak with any other family members that just want to. We also, when we sponsor someone to go to treatment, we do that in honor of our angels. And so those that have a connection to Johnston County, we go ahead and we honor them every time we sponsor someone. So that family member can know that someone is receiving recovery treatment in honor of their lost loved one. And so that's been a moment of healing, because that family member can also write or come visit or walk alongside this person as they receive their recovery and see how the loss that they've experienced, the tragedy that they have experienced, may be impacting someone else. So that's been a wonderful way to honor those that we've lost.
Yeah. Wow. That is beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Okay, so my last question, what I ask all my mamas before we wrap up, and I definitely, just listening to your story, I definitely want to hear. Kelly, what are your hopes of heaven?
My hopes of heaven. So, you know, I think about this a lot right now.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so my hopes are, one, that our children are doing what they love the most. I see John fishing. I see him, you know, at the most beautiful, a lake we can't even imagine, and just sitting there doing the thing that he loved the most. I see David sitting right beside him, making him laugh. You know, that they are together, that they are brothers in a way that they were never able to be brothers on earth, but they are brothers because Jesus is there. And I see them standing at that gate when my time comes and I get to go home, waiting for me with their arms open, and so proud of how we lived for them and how we honored them. And I just cannot wait to walk into their arms.
Yes. Kelly, I love it. I love your hopes of heaven. I love it. So I'm just wanting to thank you again for joining me on the podcast. I send out my heart. It just goes out to you for your boys. I am so in awe of your strength. You know, you're just giving, you're giving me strength as I'm sitting here interviewing you. So just keep going. Whatever, we know what it is. I won't say whatever. Your faith, don't let go. That's, you know, yeah. I cling to him. He's all I got. I cling to him. So yes. Thank you for just helping us heal today.
Thank you for, you know, I didn't know what I was going to say, and I'm just, it's healing for me to talk to you. And so I thank you too for what you're doing. Don't stop. You are obviously walking in his will.
Wow. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. So we're going to wrap up this episode. If there's any moms out there who believe that their story will help other moms heal, go ahead and reach out to Angel Moms Hopes of Heaven, Alana Song, Facebook. Just reach out to me and we will get you on the podcast. Kelly, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.